potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, Star Trek Discovery Season 5, Deer Camp 86, and a look back at Stone Cold. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Wednesday. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Blue Sky or Mastodon, I'm at Kevin Carr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Actually, I just want to give a little bit of an apology here. If you recall, last week, I was talking about the royal family. And pulling the curtain back on how this show is put together, this show is pre-produced. So if you're listening to this on a Saturday or Sunday, it's not live. It was produced on a Thursday, actually. Thursday and then Friday morning is usually when the production works on this show. So by noon, the show's wrapped and it's done. And there was this weird, unfortunate timing that Kate Middleton announced that she had cancer and that she had this cancer diagnosis. And everybody knows that. They've heard, seen it in the news. But that hit Friday at noon, which was after I wrapped the show. So I had this whole little thing about how weird it was with how cagey the royal family was and how secretive they were being. And all it was doing was generating more and more rumors and conspiracy theories. And I had a chuckle at it. I was having a bit of a laugh. And that came across very much in poor taste if you listen to it after she made that announcement. So if that came across as in poor taste, my apologies. I was reacting to the situation before that announcement, and I was in no way wanting to make fun of her or her family for a cancer diagnosis, because that's two cancer diagnoses in as many months, which is rough for any family. I don't care whether you're the royals or not. So my apologies to the royal family and Kate Middleton if last week's episode, I don't know if they listen. They probably don't. I don't think I score that high on the importance meter. But for anyone who heard that and felt that it was in bad taste, I'm just offering an apology. In other news, let's talk about the box office. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire topped the box office with $45 million. And it's so funny, there's so many think pieces about it. Is it good enough? Because it was about what 2016's Ghostbusters made. There was a bunch of people who were fans of that who were just like, see, it's the same amount. That wasn't that big of a flop. And I'm like, well, here's the thing. I think it's very unfair and not accurate to compare a release from 2016 to a release in 2024. We're talking, you had all of streaming and COVID happening between this, and that has dramatically changed how people watch movies. The way people watch movies 10 years ago is very, very different than how they watch movies today and how they choose to consume the movies. So I think $45 million, that's fine for a movie like this. I think that works. But part of the problem was they don't know whether they're going for a new audience or an old audience. And if all you're doing is looking for Gen Xers who want to re-experience Ghostbusters in the theaters, kind of that time has passed. So we need to kind of pass the torch. So I think that you can do more with this franchise. It's just you can't rely on the nostalgia. And then Late Night with the Devil came in sixth with $2.8 million, but it had a gross of, on Sunday, which is Palm Sunday of all times, $666,666, which I don't know if that's a real number, if they somehow cooked that into the books. It reminds me of when the Omen remake came out in 2006. They had a 666 somewhere in the estimate number, but we'll see. The last piece of news, I got an email from a listener and a friend, Hunter from Portland, and he wanted to get my take on something. He says, I just was wondering about the Disney-Sony deal for physical media. What are your thoughts on the deal? Or did you hear about it? And I just was curious. Yes, I did hear about this. I was going to talk about it. I just didn't have time a couple weeks ago. For those who don't know, Disney is getting out of the physical media business. There used to be a big deal with Disney DVDs and Blu-rays, and they've pulled back on that. And part of the reason they're doing that is because they're really trying to pump up Disney Plus. But they have sub-licensed or subcontracted through Sony for them to produce and release their DVDs, physical media of some of their things. Now, first of all, I don't think they're going to get everything. There's a lot of stuff that's on Disney Plus in terms of like even new content, like, you know, something like Sulphur Springs, you know, one of those shows that they do. I don't know if you're going to get that. I don't see it as a catastrophic thing because there's still their high level releases, their big movies and their TV series, and they're going to be re-releasing, of course, Star Wars and Marvel stuff all the time from now until the end of time. I don't think that's going to be a tragic loss because I think that stuff's still going to be out there in very acceptable numbers. Where you're going to see the deficit is like the older movies, like some of the stuff I've talked about recently, like stuff like The Black Hole or even Tron or something like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Those vintage releases you may not see cropping up as much because Disney used to be very aggressive about its physical media. And one of the things they would do is they'd release it on physical media and then they'd make it unavailable and put it back in the vault. And then they'd bring it out again in the vault, mainly for the, like the kids titles, because you get a new generation of kids every 5 to 15 years. So that's kind of a strategy they used and it served them well. And they're still going to do that with the big titles. I think where you're going to really see the losses is if you want a DVD of Return to Oz or more vintage titles like the Apple Dumpling Gang or something like that, you're going to have to go on eBay and Amazon to try and find a used copy because I don't think the new ones are going to be there. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Alien Romulus, which comes to theaters on August 16th.
Run.
Not a whole lot in that trailer, I will admit. The reason I found that trailer interesting is for 2 points. The first is it looks like it's going back to a horror story. Personally, I liked Prometheus. I did not like Alien Covenant. I kind of need to revisit that. But it's always been tough to decide what is an alien movie. Is it a horror movie or is it a sci-fi movie? It's kind of both, really. But when James Cameron got involved, it became an action series, and not all of them need to be that way. And that's, I think, why it got so wonky with the Alien franchise. But Alien Romulus looks like it's going back to just a good old-fashioned haunted house in space. The second thing is that siren you hear in the background, that's played in the original Alien trailer that came out in 1979. So that is a throwback and an awareness of where the story comes from. The next one I want to hit is Bad Boys Ride or Die, or Part 4, in theaters June 7th.
Dad, look.
We now have evidence that the late Captain Conrad Howard of Miami PD was working directly with drug cartels for years.
Captain Howard is being framed.
Let's go.
What the?
He's texting us from the other side.
No, he's not, Marcus.
If he's seeing this, I'm probably dead.
I don't know how high up this goes, but don't trust anybody. You're my bad boys. Now clear my name.
This is very typical Will Smith, I'm too cool for anything. There's no vulnerability to the characters, and I get it, it's just a big stupid action movie. And, you know, the original Bad Boys was fine. I thought Bad Boys 2 was overblown. That was Michael Bay going from kind of a young pup, early filmmaker, to somebody who can command a huge budget. Bad Boys for Life was okay. I'm tired of the I'm just so cool, nothing can happen to me characters. That seems very 80s and 90s and doesn't seem to work nowadays. And so, and plus it's ridiculous how much these guys have colored their hair. I mean, it looks like it's almost painted on their head at this point. They didn't have that dark of hair when they did the first Bad Boys, what, 30 years ago? Anyway, I'll have to cover it, but I'm not dying to see it. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Star Trek Discovery Season 5 and Deer Camp 86.
Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what?
Hey,
welcome back to Fat Guys After Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the reviews, and I want to talk about Star Trek Discovery. It's season 5. It comes out next week, but since this is the final Fat Guys of the Movie show, I wanted to get out there. I'm a fan. I've always been a fan of Star Trek. Ever since I was a kid watching the original series, it was before they made The Next Generation and all you had was Star Trek. I went to the original movies in the late 70s and early 80s. So I kind of grew up with Star Trek, even though the original series was before I was born, but it was heavily run in syndication and rerun. And I have recently gone back and watched a lot of their stuff. I went and watched Enterprise. Right now I'm kind of burning through Deep Space Nine. I've seen most of the Next Generation stuff and all this new stuff, which a lot of people affectionately or unaffectionately refer to it as New Trek. So let's talk about Discovery Season 5. The USS Discovery races against time to find a series of dangerous artifacts before criminals unleash them onto the free market.
Last hands.
I shall follow your lead.
The greatest treasure in the known galaxy is out there. It's more important than you can imagine.
A search for one of the greatest powers ever known.
It could be very dangerous in the wrong hands.
This clue is the most important thing. We have to keep it safe.
I was not a fan of the first season because they were so trying to differentiate it. They were trying to do a Star Wars version of Star Trek, and that didn't work. Star Trek has a certain mindset and a certain stability to it, and you can have conflict all over the place. But you can't have the bro style that they went to with a lot of fighting, and it kind of turned into a Grey's Anatomy type show. It also bothered me that the Discovery had this incredibly novel way of traveling to any point in the universe, or any point in the galaxy, rather. Technology you never heard of. It poses a problem with canon to do that. So in one of the middle seasons, they went ahead 1,000 years, which I think serves the show because this needed to be outside of the original timeline because Strange New Worlds is already pushing the limit in terms of what it can do as canon and not violate what's been in the other series. But I really like where Star Trek Discovery has landed. They're where the show needs to be. And what's really funny about it is there's some elements that I never liked. Like, I didn't like the Grey's Anatomy style of it. But there's one character, her name's Tilly, who's very much a Grey's Anatomy type character. It's like she walked off the set of Grey's Anatomy. But she's one of my favorite characters. But I think they developed her, and they developed the character of Michael Burnham enough that she has earned her right to be the captain. And Saru is a great character as well, and they've developed him. They've brought in David Cronenberg to play this guy from the future Federation, and I really like what they've done with him. So I am very pleased with where Star Trek Discovery has come. Now, this season, it's kind of playing the greatest hits a little bit. I've only seen 4 episodes because this airs, I think it drops on the April 4th. It's trying to wrap up the story and kind of give a direction to them. And I think they're using this also as a launching pad for the Starfleet Academy series coming out, I think, next year sometime. But I think you have this whole timeline and an entire galaxy and universe to explore. So there's plenty of room for all this stuff. But they also are kind of playing the greatest hits. They're going back in time at times to sort of flashing back to characters as they were before. So I think that works really, really well. I like the fact that they're striking a balance between an actual through storyline where they've got a MacGuffin they're following through the whole season, but also paying tribute to where they've been and where they're going and how they've changed and what they are now, but also kind of giving a nice little, you know, range of callbacks so the fans of the series can enjoy it. Because they kind of did the same thing with Picard when they finally wrapped that series up. So I really did enjoy this. I can't wait to see the rest of the season, but it's a strong season-long MacGuffin that brings the story fully into the new century. It feels like this is where Discovery needs to be, and I'm glad they launched it into the future. So I'm going to say Star Trek Discovery Season 5 rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about this other film. This doesn't come out until May, but a friend of mine had worked on this, Paul Wilson, who plays one of my favorite archetypes in a slasher movie. In this movie, he plays I called him the dim-witted sheriff, and he really's not. In this movie, he's not. He knows more about what's going on, and that's something that Paul even said to me. He goes, well, I'm not the dim-witted sheriff, and I'm like, after seeing the movie, he's right. But it's a throwback slasher movie to the 80s, and it's called Deer Camp 86, and I said, yeah, let me take a look, and I'll be curious. I'll see what it is, and I'll cover it on the show. A group of hunters in 1986 are stalked in the woods by a mysterious creature seeking revenge.
You boys were at the Peace Pipe last night, weren't you? Bartender was found murdered this morning. Too many of our girls go missing. Outsiders come up here and take more than venison.
We did not come up here to get in any trouble, Your Honor.
No hiding from the sins committed on these lands.
These hunters are just out there for a good time, and they're a bunch of idiots. You know, like, there's the one guy who's the stock, I'm just here to drink and goof off. All the bro culture from the 80s that just drips through this movie. And they get caught up in this bar fight that then the results of that happens and pushes them into the situation where there's something stalking them. Okay, there's several ways to look at this. On one hand, just as a slasher movie is a bunch of people in the woods. It takes a while to get to the slashing. And it's not a traditional slasher movie. It's not like babysitters being killed or kids at a campground, even though it has camp in the title. It's just a bunch of hunters, these guys who were out in the woods drinking beer and shooting at deer. So it doesn't have that final girl element to it. It has more of a mystery behind it. It takes a while to get to the slashing, but there is gore in there. Now, there are some people who are, when it comes to a horror movie, they worry about the kills and the gore and the exploitation nature to it. And that's there. It doesn't have the, let's just say it doesn't have the jiggle factor you would expect in a slasher homage to the 80s, but I think it's fine for that. I didn't like the characters. And none of the guys who were in danger, I didn't care if they all got killed. It's just, I was like, eh. And that's a real struggle. You gotta have, especially in a horror movie, you gotta want the characters to survive. But this is one I really didn't. And it plays around with some interesting stuff with native stories. And we've seen this in, everything from the latest season of True Detective to, what was that, Wind River, that movie with Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen. There's a lot of Native American women that just disappear. There's violence against them that is not always, I don't know, it's not always given the appropriate amount of investigation. And there is a certain underlying tone to that does resonate a bit. It just resonates in this sort of somewhat hollow slasher montage. Now, Paul Wilson is actually great as the sheriff. I wanted to see more of him. He only has a couple scenes, but I think he held the story together. He was the most complex character. Everyone else just kind of was an archetype, you know? So, I mean, this has some decent horror violence, but the unlikable characters kind of stand in the way of really making a good movie, of making a movie that I could root for. I mean, I couldn't even root against him. It's not that I didn't like the people. I just didn't care. So I'm going to give it a kind of rocks simply because it's a small, low-budget thing with its hearts on the right place, trying to do the right thing, has some big wrinkles in it. But I think if you're looking for independent horror, like fiercely independent horror, you can check this one out.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, and Stone Cold. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Godzilla X Kong, or Godzilla Kisses Kong, The New Empire. Two titans team up to tackle a terrible troublemaker. I've been waiting a while to do that one.
This world has more secrets than we could possibly imagine.
What is that?
That's not Kong. Who could have done this?
Kong can't stop this on his own.
He won't be alone.
So I've had some hot and cold views on the new string of Godzilla and Kong movies. In general, I did not like that first Godzilla movie that Gareth Edwards directed. I just thought it was... There wasn't enough Godzilla. There weren't enough Titan battles in it. It spent more time cutting away from Godzilla than actually showing Godzilla. And it worked as a setup movie, but as a standalone movie, it didn't work. But the other Godzilla movies, like Godzilla, King of the Monsters, and then Kong Skull Island, which I thought was a really fantastic movie. Some great underlying subtext in that film, too. And then Godzilla vs. Kong that came out 3 years ago, I really enjoyed. I just like seeing the monster smackdown. And with Godzilla X Kong, the X means they're teaming up. I don't know. It feels like you're watching an ad for a pay-per-view event at times. But the whole point is they're going to team up against these new titans, these new dangers. And one of the things with this movie that I felt was lacking was the amount of monster smackdowns and the amount of times Kong is going to go up against something or Godzilla is going to go up against something. For a movie that had those two title characters, they kind of both got sidelined very quickly. And that's fine if you have a decent human character element. But they take the characters from the last film. And I mean, look, I like Rebecca Hall and her character. But really, all she does in this movie is explain backstory to these Titan characters, these Titan monsters in this monsterverse, the monarch side of it. And I've heard other people complain about this. It feels like they spent more time trying to set up their monsterverse, their monarchverse, if you will, and they didn't actually have much of the Titans in. I mean, the Titans are in it, but they're just kind of wandering around or they're interacting with each other. There's not the battles or anything. And at a certain point, what they're saying about giving the backstory to this and that and what this Titan does and that Titan, it's just kind of a bunch of gobbledygook and mumbo-jumbo, and it didn't make any sense at a certain point. And it's not like they're talking about anything pragmatic. It is all made-up stuff about creatures living inside the Earth. So, yeah, you could do kind of whatever. I don't know why they needed that much backstory for it. And they tie in the deaf girl from the previous film and how she can communicate with Kong and how her people are no longer around. But in a lot of ways, it feels like it could be anything. Because again, it's a made-up culture. So they spent a lot of time. There's like more than half of the movie is them just kind of searching around for some signal and what it means. And look, you know, I like the grand vistas and the CGI, but at a certain point, we've gotten to the point now that when you look at CGI stuff, particularly manufactured environments, they don't look real. They look so real, but I don't know, there's something about them that looks almost video game-ish. And all the stuff that takes place in this hidden Earth, the hollow Earth where all this stuff goes on, all the stuff that takes place there just doesn't seem to look real because it looks too real or hyper real. I don't know. It just didn't hold together from a visual effects standpoint even. I mean, Kong is cool and Godzilla is cool. And look, I know there's a lot of people comparing this to Godzilla Minus One. Look, you can't even compare the two. They're very different movies. I mean, Godzilla Minus One is on a low budget and it's Japanese and it's a historical piece and it's about guilt and survivorship and all that kind of stuff. And this is just a movie about monsters beating each other up. But even then, it takes a while to get to them beating each other up. I mean, there's an entire scene where Kong is interacting with other giant apes, and it's like watching the Star Wars holiday special with decent effects because they're not talking English and it's just them grunting and yelling at each other. I don't know. I mean, I did like the previous Godzilla and Kong movies. But this one just didn't have the stuff that you go see the movies for. And it just seemed so weirdly manufactured plot-wise. So, I don't know. I mean, I'll be nice to it. I mean, sure, there's some fun monster action, but the dialogue gymnastics required to explain up and down the monsterverse wears thin. I'll say it's a success in the sense that you get to see monsters fighting. But it's kind of a letdown. Still, I mean, I'll say it kind of rocks, but, you know, there you go.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I dive into the vault and check something out again this week. This is another one I swerved into through Riff Tracks. I actually purchased this through Riff Tracks, so I spent $10 on this at one point. And that is Stone Cold. It's from 1991. It's an action movie. Football star Brian Bosworth tries his hand at acting in this 1991 action film about a maverick cop, big surprise, who goes undercover with a dangerous biker gang.
The Brotherhood. They're an underworld on wheels. They answer to no law. They live by one rule.
God forgives, the Brotherhood doesn't.
There's only one man tough enough and crazy enough to take them on.
You just picked up the wrong passenger, buddy!
There's some good people involved in this movie. Lance Hendrickson plays the bad guy, and he's always fun. William Forsythe is in it. I think he played Al Capone when they did the Untouchables TV series in the 90s. You'd recognize him. He's pretty well known, at least look-wise. He has a distinctive look. But this is basically the Hollywood trying to make another Arnold Schwarzenegger type action star. And they do this all the time, you know. And sometimes it's successful. They've done it with John Cena, they've done it with The Rock, you know, they've done it with obviously Schwarzenegger and Stallone, but sometimes it just doesn't work. And we do have a minefield of failed attempts with either football stars or boxers or ultimate fighters. I mean, like Randy Couture, why is he still making movies? Nobody cares. But what's interesting about this one is Brian Bosworth had a very distinct look. I mean, he had that sort of side-shaved mullet and the earring. And how do you go undercover looking like Brian Bosworth? You're the most distinctive-looking person on the planet. The story's terrible. It is so loaded with cliches and bad dialogue. And Brian Bosworth tries to act his way through it. He doesn't do a very good job. And the story is at times incomprehensible. The dialogue at times doesn't even make sense within the scene. Apparently, the screenwriter quit, or the writer quit, and they had to improvise a lot of their scenes. I think Lance Hendrickson improvised a lot of his dialogue. Not a big surprise, because the dialogue's terrible in this movie. But it does not hold together. But what's so funny is it was kind of made when the tough guy action star was waning. You still had Schwarzenegger and Bruce Willis and Stallone to a degree in the 90s. But you were struggling to just get the gritty maverick cop story. I mean, they were still making Lethal Weapon movies then. But I think we were running out of steam with the tough guy action movies. And this one tried to start out then, but you know, just 1991, if Bosworth had come around 5 to 10 years earlier, I think it would have been a much more successful franchise. But the final scene, though, the whole thing culminates at this scene in a courthouse, and it's a great action set piece. I mean, it's like a 20-minute heavy explosive, lots of gunplay, lots of action shots, lots of people flying around on motorcycles and in a helicopter. It's a very impressive climax to the movie. It's just unfortunate it comes as the climax to a pretty unimpressive movie. So, I mean, in spite of that rip-roaring ending action set piece, Bosworth's lack of charisma fails to raise the film to tough guy glory. You know, it's not going to be another Cobra or anything like that. So, I don't know. The movie's not great. It's funny to watch through riff tracks, but even then, it's just a boring film. So I'm going to have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be doing the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Wednesday and my Fat Guys Farewell. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The last time you're being welcomed back to Fat Guys at the Movies. I know it's sad. The time is over. I'm ready to sing with Carol Burnett. I'm glad we had this time together. Pull on my ear, all that good stuff. It is the final segment for the final episode of Fat Guys at the Movies. And because of that, I'm going to move some things around a little bit. And that means that instead of going into another review of just a regular movie, I'm saving something special at the end, which puts me into what was normally the final segment of the show, and that is the Home Cinema Roundup. Today's spotlight is on Wednesday. On Blu-ray this week, for those who don't have Netflix, came out on the 26th. We talked about this back when it first dropped like a year and a half ago, and I think it was in September of 2022, and I reviewed it then, but you know, having a chance to kind of look back on it and see what's happened. So let's take a look at the Wednesday Blu-ray. Wednesday Addams struggles to make friends and solve a mystery while attending the boarding school where her parents met.
People like Dalton shouldn't be allowed to procreate. Getting expelled was just a bonus.
You will love Nevermore. It's a magical place.
Where I met your mother.
The son I love.
Finally, you will be among peers who understand you. Maybe you'll even make some friends.
Want to take a stab at being social? I do like stabbing.
I do like the show. It's definitely aimed at a younger audience. This is a very Netflix thing. A lot of Netflix series aim towards a sort of a teenage, early 20s audience. And that makes sense because they want to capture their interest early. The younger audience is a very important demographic for advertisers and people are going to sell things. So Wednesday, it reminds me of stuff like The Vampire Diaries. If this didn't end up on Netflix, I wouldn't have been surprised if, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, if they would have made it, it would have been on the CW. What I love about it is it feels authentically like the Addams Family. And there's been various versions of it, all the way going back to the original TV series. But even before that, the old Charles Addams cartoons, it doesn't feel like it's been given its own spin. And the characters are all there, especially from the original TV series. And of all the franchises that have ebbed and flowed through the years, I think that the Addams Family tends to be most consistent. I mean, obviously it went from a staged setting on a weekly TV show in the 60s to feature films, and then they did an animated movies of it. And I thought all those really felt authentically Addams Family. I didn't feel like anybody was going off on their own and kind of doing their own thing. And this one absolutely works. And it's made a star out of Jenna Ortega because she is absolutely perfect for Wednesday Addams. And I also love the fact that they brought back Christina Ricci, who played Wednesday Addams back in the movies, the Addams Family and the Addams Family Values movies that Barry Sonnenfeld did in the early 90s. That shows that there's a friendly sort of family atmosphere to it. And it's a fun show. Now, the reason you get the Blu-ray is if you don't have a Netflix account or if you don't want to watch the ads in an ad-supported Netflix account, you can watch this and it's all clean and it's clear. But it goes to the question that Hunter from Portland had at the beginning of the show when you talk about physical media. Just because it's on Netflix doesn't mean that it's going to be there forever, and Netflix is going to get rid of some of their stuff just contractually they have to get rid of because they go past the rights of the time they have it. Arrested Development, I think, has to come off by 2025 or 2026 because they don't own it free and clear. It's a distribution deal. And MGM owns the Addams Family, and MGM is associated with Amazon. So I think it's a good thing that they've offered a physical media of this, because if it just goes off of Netflix, then it would just vaporize. But, you know, it's a good show. I mean, it's fun. It gets a little bit silly at times. But some of the characters, I think they do a great job developing the characters. And one of my favorite characters in her, honestly, is her roommate Enid, who's the polar opposite in terms of mood and fashion that Wednesday is. Wednesday's all drab and sulky, and she's bright and cheery. And I just think it's just so cute, the two of them together. But, you know, this is a fun expansion of the Addams Family, and it settles nicely and appropriately into a teen drama. So it works. I enjoyed this. I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan because I think it would connect more with a younger audience, but I still think it was neat what they did. So I'm going to have to say that Wednesday kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies, and we are coming up to the end of the show. So I wanted to give a Fat Guys farewell. I've had a lot of questions over the last couple weeks after announcing that I was going to be leaving the airwaves on a regular weekly show. But look, I'm like a cockroach. You're not going to get rid of me that easy. You will no longer have the weekly Fat Guys at the Movie show broadcast on the radio and on podcast form. But that doesn't mean that I'm stopping doing movie reviews. You can still hear me on Westwood One's America in the Morning every day, actually. I do entertainment reporting for them. And you'll hear my reviews on Fridays on America in the Morning. But it won't be the long-form radio show. And it's interesting because it caused me to go back and look. You know, this is almost to the day, 17 years after I started this show. The first episode, I believe, was for the weekend of March 30th, 2007. Back when it was just a podcast on Film School Rejects. And the movies we reviewed were Blades of Glory, Meet the Robinsons, and The Lookout. So much has changed in movies over the last 17 years. But like I said, you can find me on social media. I'm still going to be active there. I'm hoping to ramp some of that up on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok, all of those with the handle Fat Guys at the Movies. And then for Twitter or X, if you want to call it X, but Twitter, Blue Sky, and Mastodon, I'm at Kevin Carr. So one of those two will find it. And if you don't know, just go to Fat Guys at the Movies. The website's still going to be there. I'm still going to be posting movie reviews on Fat Guys at the Movies. The archive's still going to be there on Fat Guys at the Movies, at least for the time being. And then I've had a lot of people ask, what am I doing next? What's next for this? I mean, like I said, I'm still going to be doing movie reviews. I'm still going to be on social media. I'm still going to be on the radio. I just won't be on the show. And I won't be doing the weekly call-ins if you listen to me talk to different hosts around the country every week. But I'm still going to be here for award season. I'm still going to be in the Critics' Choice. I'm still involved, but I'm going to be doing some writing. I do fiction writing, and I've been doing fiction writing ever since I was in high school. And I had a modicum of success in the small publication market back in the 90s, to the point that at one point they actually were putting my name on the cover of the magazine, which kind of shows that you at least have made an impact into the field. Unfortunately, it was a mistake because it was on an Aboriginal science fiction magazine, which is a good magazine. It was a good thing to have a cover on. It's just another guy named Kevin Carr sent in something and they thought it was me and he made the cover. And it was not a good story. It was way in the back, but my name got on the cover. So I didn't know about that, but I have been writing. And if you go to Fat Guys at the Movies, you can find links to my books. I'm going to be starting a Substack or something like that, where you can subscribe to my regular stories, and you're going to be getting stuff in your email box. It'll be a reasonable price, and I'm going to be developing some more books and audiobooks and some publishing, because I've always wanted to do that. And gosh, you know what? I'm in my 50s now. I don't want to be sitting there in my 60s or 70s regretting not doing it. So that's what you got to look forward to, but everything will be out of the portal, Fat Guys at the Movies. But let me just say that it has been an honor and a privilege to share my thoughts on movies and pop culture for the last 17 years on the radio and through a podcast form. In particular, there's some people I'd like to thank before I go. Thanks to Josh for taking a chance on me, getting me on the radio through Talk Media Network. I will be forever grateful. And Michael for doing some of the heavy lifting in production for Talk Media Network. Big thanks to Neil, who let me start things off by doing a podcast with me and putting it on Film School Rejects. And also a big thanks to Amy from Cheyenne for putting me on the radio for the first time, not just as a guest, but putting the radio show on KGAB in Cheyenne. Thanks to Steve from Phoenix, or Red State Gabe, for being one of the most loyal listeners and a very good friend. Big thanks to Chris C. from Florida for reminding me of what a love of movies means and what a passion for movies is. And then for the broadcast element, thanks to Clear Channel for getting me known. I got my start doing movie reviews through Clear Channel when they had a national news desk in Chicago. And thanks to Westwood One for continuing to give me exposure and give me a leg up as a entertainment journalist. Thanks to the Owens Group and Allied Media for arranging the screenings. And thanks to Julianne for being one of the best publicists I've ever dealt with in the industry. It's been an honor, it's been a privilege, and I'm sad to see it all go, but I'm on to new things. And next week, I'm sleeping in. From now on, have a fat time at the movies or at home.